Today is Thursday, January the 7th, 2016. We're going to hear what Moshe Soloveitchik should share on Parshas Va'era.
I'd like to like you to know how much we appreciate your presence here. Hope you'll enjoy the class. In case you don't know, we are Milchik. I know it's a difficult thing to determine, but we are. And we're going to be davening just a couple of minutes after the class, about 3 minutes. If you could be so kind, I'm going to do the same. If you could take your cell phones and silence them. Okay. Leave them in the car if you want, but whatever you do, just lower the so it doesn't disturb the class. I'd like to take a minute to thank Young Israel for being so generous and allowing us to have our classes here. And I'm not going to mention who, but I have some helpers, some secret helpers that that make sure that the tables are ready for us and the tablecloths are ready for us. And then I also have some people who are very generous, who are providing us with some plates and cups, plasticware, napkins, so on like that, and also those that are going to be bringing them in the future. And finally, I'd like to I'd just like to thank personally Rabbi Berger. He's not here today, but I very very much appreciate his friendship and hospitality and generosity. So, it needs to be said. Anyway, Revotion?
Okay. This week's center is Parshas Va'era, I think, right?
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, so, the Parshas Va'era, there is a pasuk, very interesting pasuk, at the beginning of the Sedra. And there's a similar pasuk found in Bezos HaBracha. And the Baal Turim discusses it here, and he discusses it in Bezos HaBracha. And the approach that I'm going to use is based on the approach of the Baal Turim in Bezos HaBracha, not the approach of the Baal Turim over here. On page 318... Perek Vav, chapter 6, Pasuk Hey. Vehevesi eschem, I shall bring you, el haaretz asher nasasis yodi, losei soso laAbraham liYitzchak liYaakov. I will bring you, that's the fifth expression of redemption. The first four expressions, Vahotzesi eschem, Vihitzalti eschem, I shall take you out, I shall save you, Vigalti, I shall redeem you, Vilakati, and I shall take you. These are the four expressions, and corresponding with these four expressions of redemption, we have four cups of wine. The question is, and then there's a fifth one, Vehevesi. The question everybody asks is, why is it that we drink only four cups of wine? So some people will find that less than usual. And we should have five cups of wine because of Vehevesi. And the simple answer, first of all, in the pasuk, after the four cups of wine, it says, "V'yedatem kani Hashem Elokeichem," and you will know that I am God who takes you out of the land of Egypt. And then Vahavesi is after you get to know me. So the Vahavesi comes to, in a sense, the Vahavesi comes to that's after we recognize who God is. But we need Yetzias Mitzrayim, we need the Exodus to recognize God. Now, for some reason, the coming into Eretz Yisrael is not identified as the purpose being to recognize God. Why is that? Now, it's a thought that I've expressed continuously. We take the two holidays of Pesach versus Sukkot. The two holidays of Pesach versus Sukkot, and Pesach focuses on complete dependency upon God. Now the truth is, irregardless of what we do and what we don't do, there is complete dependency on God. We can have the best army. We can have the best soldiers. We could have the best military equipment. But it's all because God helps us to do it. But what unfortunately happens is where man becomes involved. When man becomes involved, there's a tendency not to see the hand of God. There's a tendency to see me or man. And I always point out, the doctors in the room will forgive me, my son, Shaul Yosef, who passed away years ago, but he had a certain miraculous recovery. Everybody thought, when I brought him into the hospital, that he would die on the spot. And thank God he was able, after not walking for a while, he was able to walk out of the hospital, live for a year and a half after that. Now, it was really a miraculous recovery that took place Friday night. I'm not going to get too Kabbalistically involved in that. But it was a miraculous recovery that took place Friday night. And that Shabbos, I was in the hospital, and all the nurses in the hospital came down because they said they wanted to see the miracle boy of the hospital. That was the expression. Now, the doctors, who had predicted that he would die on the spot, their expression, I remember I was talking to the resident who was supposed to take care of him when they would put him on the respirator. She said to the other two doctors, I came in 2 weeks later with him for chemotherapy. She says, how did we do it? The neurologist said it was chemotherapy, and the oncologist said that it was steroids. Each one attributed to the other one because they were smart enough to know that they didn't do it. Anyway, so but the question was, why was it that the nurses referred to him as the miracle boy of the hospital? I told this to the doctor, by the way. He didn't disagree with me. Why is it that the nurses referred to him as the miracle boy of the hospital? And the doctors were trying to figure out how they did it. So I said it's very simple. A nurse sees themselves as an aide, as a helper. The doctor sees themselves as the primary health giver. The nurse doesn't feel competition with God. The nurse helps the doctor. She helps God also. The doctors, again, present company excluded. So the doctors see themselves as the primary health giver. They're competing with God, so there's no room for God. So it's how did we do it? Okay. So what I think is, you see, there's a very interesting thought expressed by the Balatanya. everybody knows that I'm not a Lubavitcher chassid, but the idea is the Lubavitch, that the Baal HaTanya says, they might not necessarily be pshat, but they're based on ideas that are very, very true. The Baal HaTanya in Likutei Torah, he says that why is it that the Meraglim, the spies who went to Eretz Yisrael came back with a false report. Anashim, Rashi says, when they left, Anashim Tzadikim, they were leaders of the Jewish people. Rashi B'nai Yisrael Hema. Well, that might explain part of it. Anyway, so leaders of the Jewish people. So all of a sudden they come back with a bad report. Now, to be honest with you, I don't think that this is the true shot, but the idea behind it is very true. He says that the Meraglim understood, the spies understood, that when they enter Eretz Yisrael, it can't go on forever. Now, there are many that don't understand that. But it can't go on forever that the bread is going to start coming down from heaven, and all the miracles that they had on a daily basis, the miracles that they had in the desert, miracles were on a daily basis. Why did the Jewish people complain so much in the desert? Part of the reason was because supernatural and natural somehow molded one within the other. So they didn't recognize that they were getting anything special, you know, because if you get something special every day, hey, that's just the way it is. They take it for granted. But the Nesiim, the leaders of the Jewish people, they understood that life can't be that way forever. And they understood that if a country is going to be built, it's going to have to be built on hard work. And they wanted, and their problem, the Baal HaTanya says, and again, I don't think that this is pshat, but the idea behind it is very true. He says that they felt that unless they had the bread coming down from heaven all the time, and the fire and the cloud covering them and protecting them, and all the miracles that happened on a daily basis in the desert, the Jews won't feel close to God. When do we feel close to God? When something special happens. But when we earn a living, when we get our daily food in the normal way, we have a tendency not to see the hand of God. And the Jewish people were slaves in Egypt. And there's a certain tendency. Look at every liberation movement. There's a certain tendency afterwards to say, look what I did. As a matter of fact, the Jewish people, to a certain degree, tried it anyway. In Parshas Beshalach, the Jewish people went out of Egypt. V'chamushim olu b'nei Yisrael m'Mitzrayim. They went out with arms. Why did they have to go out with arms? Everything was done miraculously. In other words, sometimes people like to hold guns. It gives them a feeling, I did it. I'm not taking any position on the constitutional amendment to the right to protect if they get to hold arms. But anyway, people like to make believe that they're the ones that did it. So the Jewish people, when they marched out of Egypt, even though they just had 10 makos, 10 plagues, walking out with guns means we were victorious. We did it. So there was this tendency. The Jewish people had to come to recognize God. Step one, recognizing God. Step two, what I do, it's only because of God's help. But it'll never work the other way around. So it was important, first, for everything. In Egypt, the Jews sat back. They did absolutely nothing. They were observers. They watched. And God did everything. They had to recognize God. Recognize God in nature and recognizing God in the breaking of nature. But then they came to realize, and only after they entered Eretz Yisrael. Now, once they entered Eretz Yisrael, that represents the permanent situation, or at least the situation that had to be permanent. It was necessary. Not that there aren't miracles that take place in Eretz Yisrael, but the supernatural miracles cannot take place on a day-to-day basis in Eretz Yisrael. So, because Eretz Yisrael represents the permanence of the Jew. And in a sense, this is the holiday of Pesach. Pesach represents where we did nothing. God did everything. That's why the four cups of wine are only correspond with the first four expressions of Geula, the first four expressions of redemption. The Hevesi, that's after the Jewish people recognize God. There is a tendency, you know, there was a, when the declaration of the State of Israel was made, so there was a whole fight between the religious parties, the religious Zionist parties, and the non-religious parties. At that time, it wasn't just non-religious, it was Mapam. Mapam was a socialist party very close to communism. And needless to say that they were not exactly religiously inclined. And the religious party said that unless the Declaration of Independence will mention God, they're not going to sign the Declaration of Independence. And Mapam said that if it mentions God, they're not going to sign the independence. This was the first confrontation. Ben Gurion, who was basically a smart politician, there's no taking that away from him, that he confronted. How was he to resolve? So he wrote in the Declaration of Independence. By the way, my father had this Declaration of the Independence of the State of Israel hanging in the house. So you should know where, from what background I'm coming. So it said there, Betuchim Anu B'Tzur Yisrael. We have our reliance in Tzur Yisrael. Tzur Yisrael means the strength of Israel, but it's also a terminology for God. So the Mapam interpret that to mean that means the army and the religious party says B'tzur Yisrael, that meant God. And the truth of the matter is it's both. The strength of the Jewish people is God. But when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, when it comes to a permanent situation, we can't rely on supernatural miracles, but we have to pray for God's aid in the regular miracles. So this is why this. So if you take a look at the holiday of Sukkot, on the other hand, now there's a dispute. What the Sukkot commemorates, according to the Rambam, and it's really an argument between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shmuel, I think, or Rabbi Akiva, I forgot, whether Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shmuel, whether the sukkos, the huts that the Jewish people had in the desert, was commemorates the clouds, or does it commemorate or was it the huts that the Jewish people themselves built? And then Shmini Atzeres, we leave our temporary dwelling and we enter our permanent dwelling, which is Eretz Yisrael, in our house, Shmini Atzeres. What's the idea? The idea is Shmini Atzeres, I think, represents the change from going to total dependency, and the word total dependency is a bad word, because we're always totally dependent upon God. But our non-doing something, our not doing something, to our doing something and recognizing God's hand behind it. Certainly according to the opinion that the Jewish people made the sukkos, the huts that they lived in, that represented the Jewish people doing something for themselves. But believe me, living in huts in the desert is not something that people could really survive in. It's only because God wanted us to start working, and he helped us to survive. And then when we get to Eretz Yisrael, there are miracles. The walls of Jericho fall down. But on a day-to-day basis, the miracles have to come combined with what we are doing. So Pesach is dedicated to recognizing God. The tendency of man is that where he's involved, he doesn't come to recognize God. Only after he establishes that relationship with God can he take that next step to recognize God's aid, God's help for him when he is involved. Now, but what I want to really discuss is this pasuk here. The Hevesi Eschem al Aretz, I shall bring you to the land. Asher Nosasi Es Yodi Losei Soso, that I raised my hand, that means an oath. Raising of a hand, yeah. We have lawyers who are also science doctors, no? Okay. No? Guess not. We have a lawyer. Anyway, when you take an oath in court, they tell you to raise your right hand, no? That's the symbol. The symbol of an oath is the raising of a hand. So God obviously does, it's only figuratively. So God says, let's say so that I took an oath to give it to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. It's very strange. He says, I took an oath to give it to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. He should say, I took an oath to give it to the descendants, or that I gave it. What do you mean, I took an oath to give it to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov? But okay. V'nasati oso lechem morasha, and I will give it to you as a heritage. Ani Hashem, I am God. Now this word Marasha, heritage, we find in another place in the Torah, in Parshas Vezos HaBracha. In Parshas Vezos HaBracha, Torah says, Torah tziva lanu Moshe, Marasha ki hilas Yaakov. Torah, Moshe commanded us as a Marasha, as a heritage for the nation of Jacob, or the congregation of Jacob. Now, what's the idea behind it? And the Baal HaTorim points out, and in different places he gives different explanations, that there is a difference between the word Marasha and the word Yerusha. Yerusha means an inheritance. And the truth is, it could be also, and the Torah uses the expression, v'horashtem es haaretz, and you shall inherit, but v'horashtem es haaretz means you shall conquer the land. But even v'horashtem es haaretz is not the word morosha. What makes something a heritage is not if just if you get it. Certainly not if just you conquer it. But even if you inherit it, the Torah, I think, tries to say that's not enough of a heritage. There's a very, very interesting medrash. Actually, two medrashim. And everybody asks the contradiction between these two medrashim. One medrash says, speaks in praise of the Jewish people, that at Mount Sinai, when God appeared to them, and through Moshe Rabbeinu initially, and he said, are they going to accept the Torah or not? They said, Nase v'nishma. We will do and we will listen. And they placed listen, do, before listen. And the Medrash says, and I think it means figuratively, but whatever. The Medrash says that as a result of placing, doing, complying, accepting, before listening, that because of that, 600,000 malachim, 600,000 angels came down and placed two crowns on the heads of each Jew. Nase, one for Nase and one for Nishma. Now, what's the idea behind it? I don't take the Medrash literally. But I think the idea behind it is, what is an angel? What is a malach? You know, you have pictures of angels. You have figures with the wings, whatever it is. But that's the word malach. What does it literally mean? It's a messenger, an agent. When we place Nase before Nishma, when we place Nase before Nishma, so we are making ourselves the agents of God, the shlichim of God. And after all, that is the job of the Jewish people. The job of the Jewish people is B'ni B'chori Yisrael. The Jewish people have to be the eldest sons of God. The eldest sons of God implies that there are other children as well. And sometimes we have a tendency to forget that. We certainly have a nationalistic mission, but we have a universal mission. Our universal mission doesn't mean that we stand at the street corners and give out flowers for everybody saying Shema or something like that. But our universal mission means that by the way we act and by the way we do, long term, we have an influence and an impact on the nations of the world. This is the medrash that says Nase v'nishma. But there's another medrash, a very strange medrash, and these two medrashim seem to be in conflict. The Medrash says that God held the mountain over the Jewish people. And he says, in tekablu es haTorah, if you'll accept the Torah, mutav, it'll be good. In lo tekablu es haTorah, if you're not going to accept the Torah, so shem tahek v'raschem, there your burial will be. Seems contradictory. The first Medrash speaks that the Jewish people were on a level higher than angels. And the other talks about, okay, they held a gun to your head God held a gun to the head and
an offer they couldn't refuse.
Yeah. So how do we resolve the contradiction? All the commentaries discuss this. But I remember when I was a young boy, my father suggested an answer. He says, "Shnei ksuvim hamachishim zezeh." When you have two psukim, here it's two medrashim that conflict with each other. You look for a third pasuk to somehow resolve the contradiction. He said there is another medrash, and the other medrash says that God appeared to the Jewish people through Moshe, and he asked the Jewish people, again this might be figurative, he asked the Jewish people for a surety that they will observe the Torah. For a surety that they will observe the Torah. And the Jewish peoples offered the Yavos, offered the patriarchs. And don't we always do that when we try to see our Jewishness? We try to point to the former generations. Halachically, that's not wrong. We're Jewish because our mothers were Jewish. We point to the former generations. But God said, I'm not accepting that. And when did he give the Torah? He gave the Torah when they offered their children. My father suggests that, again, all these midrashim might be figurative, but there's an idea behind it. We find very often that the Jews were ready to give themselves over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They were more hesitant to give their children over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To give the future generations. We are ready to accept the Torah in the situation we find ourselves. But situations change. And by the way, that's a double-edged sword. On one hand, it's a problem with those who are not who are not ready to commit their children for future generations. And on the other hand, it's a problem for those who fail to recognize that the situation will change. And because of that, do not get their children, in a sense, to accept the Torah for future generations. They think they're accepting it for future generations because they don't recognize that the situation is going to change. They're in a state of denial. But if you accept the Torah for future generations, then you have to recognize, then you have to prepare your children for changing situations. You know, it's very good to be, well, I'm not so sure about it, but I can understand people who think that they bring up their children in Bnei Brak and in Lakewood, this situation. I mentioned the story. There was a certain fellow, a very nice fellow, and today, Lakewood is busting with all kinds of religious institutions, educational institutions, and they're somewhat more progressive today than they were. But that the whole world is more progressive today than they were in the old times. But he had children who had learning disabilities. Very nice fellow. He would come to raise money, but in those days, the schools in Lakewood did not have special ed that was good. So he would have to hire teachers to teach his children because they wouldn't keep the children in the schools. So he would go from city to city to raise money, and you know, because I find myself, because of my children in a similar situation, we built up a certain relationship. And I said to him, because at that time you didn't have special ed in Lakewood, I said to him, Well, why don't you move out of Lakewood and go to a place you could have the frumest day school, the most religious day school, but there are religious day schools even in those days when the whole world was more backward when it came to special ed, that you could send your child to a school. Just move to another city. Sounds reasonable, he said to me. Because if they move out of Lakewood, they're not going to be observant. What's that idea? The idea is a failure to recognize. There is a belief that I am in Lakewood, my child is in Lakewood, my grandchild is in Lakewood. There is a denial of the facts that the world changes. That people are forced to go from one place to another. That's not accepting the Torah for all generations. When you accept the Torah for all generations, you prepare them for changing circumstances. You might not want the circumstances to change. But you better be sure, beware, that some of those circumstances are going to change. You're not going to be able to control what the circumstances that your descendants are going to find, all the descendants are going to find themselves. So that's the concept. All right, that's the concept of heritage. The concept of heritage is not just inheriting, taking it. The concept of heritage is giving it over. The Jewish people, sometimes we're ready, and this is what I think the Medrash is trying to tell us, sometimes we're ready under these circumstances to accept the Torah. God says, no. Circumstances are going to change. You have to accept the Torah for the future generations also that are going to encounter, other circumstances. But what is true about Torah is also true about Eretz Yisrael. In other words, it's not enough for the Jewish people to accept to live in Eretz Yisrael, to conquer Eretz Yisrael. But when we conquer Eretz Yisrael, when we take possession of Eretz Yisrael, when we make Eretz Yisrael the country of the Jewish people, we have to understand we're not making Eretz Yisrael the country of the Jewish people of this generation alone, but we're making Eretz Yisrael the country of the Jewish people of all future generations. Eretz Yisrael is not real estate that you can take and sell at will. Eretz Yisrael, it belongs to the Jewish people, but belonging to the Jewish people means of all generations. And that's the idea of Morasha. Morasha is that when I take Eretz Yisrael, when I live in Eretz Yisrael, I have to give it over to future generations. Why is that? But I think the reason for that is that there is a very interesting question that the Poskim discuss. Now, there was a book, Eim HaBonim Smecha. It was written by a Hungarian Rav. His name was Titel. I think he has a great grandson that's the Chabad Shliach in downstate. Anyway, he was like many of the Hungarian Rabbanim. Very, very anti-Zionist. But where he differed, where two of the Hungarian Rabbanim were outstanding in changing their opinion. One, well, Rabbi Tzal Roth, who actually was Romanian, he, as a result of World War II, he came to recognize the importance of the Jewish people having a state. And Rav Titel, now Rabbi Tzal Roth successfully moved to Eretz Yisrael after the war. Rav Titel, even though he lived throughout the war, but unfortunately he died shortly before the war was over, he was killed. But he was able to write, during the war, he was able to write a book. It's a real thick book. Why he changed his mind. It goes into halacha, discusses all the shittos. It was even translated into English. But at the beginning of the book, and the last time that it published, they published from other books also, and they discuss a certain question there. That question is, we have a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. We have a mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. The question is, what about a Jew who finds that he can do more for the Jewish people living in Eretz Yisrael if he lives outside Eretz Yisrael? Is he allowed? Now, my personal feeling is, I mean, based on what I heard from my father felt that according to the Rambam, he felt disagreed, but my father felt that according to the Rambam, no, you're not required to move to Eretz Yisrael. You're not allowed to move out of Eretz Yisrael unless there's a special need. But you're not required to move to Eretz Yisrael, but there is a mitzvah if you do. What my father would call a mitzvah kiyumis, a voluntary mitzvah. Living in Eretz Yisrael is a voluntary mitzvah. But Rav Teitel, when he changed his mind, he went to the other extreme. And his feeling was that Jews are required to live in Eretz Yisrael. And that was as a result of the experience of World War II. So Rav Teitel, so the beginning of the book, even though he didn't say to put it in, but whoever probably sensed this, put in from other books, from earlier sources, what about Jews living outside Eretz Yisrael? And the answer he gave is, that if living outside Eretz Yisrael will help the Jewish people have control over Eretz Yisrael, then not only you're not violating any mitzvah, but you're actually fulfilling the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because when I live in Eretz Yisrael, I am contributing to the Jewish people residing in Eretz Yisrael. I am part of the Jewish nation. This is what I think is the reason he doesn't say that. In other words, it's not a mitzvah just for me to live in Eretz Yisrael, but by residing in Eretz Yisrael, and if you want the best proof for it is the area, most of the areas, there are some exceptions, but after the Six-Day War, they have a lot bigger trouble giving back areas that were not settled by Jews, that were settled by Jews, than those areas that were not settled by Jews. The areas that they did not allow the Jewish people to settle, it was much easier for them to give back. The areas that the Jewish people settled, take Kiryat Arba, and they didn't want Jews to settle in Kiryat Arba. They can't give back Kiryat Arba because Jews settled there. So settlement is not just conquest. Settlement is not just living. Settlement, in a sense, assures that this land, it gives strength, gives security to the Jewish possession of the land. You know, when my son passed away, so the question arose, where he should be buried, whether to bury him in Har HaMenuchos or in Har HaZeisim, Mount Olives. And I told my brother, who lives in Eretz Yisrael, lives in the Old City, I suggested to him that he make that decision. And he decided that that my son should be buried in Har HaZeisim, Mount Olives. And ultimately, that's where my parents bought their graves, they were buried there also. And afterwards, you know, it's very difficult to visit Mount Har HaZeisim. It's very difficult. In the old days, my son, my other son, was at Sanchan. He was a paratrooper in the Israeli army. So I would go to visit the grave, so he would take his gun with him. You know, sometimes he would hold the gun outside the cab window. The cab driver was somewhat upset. Anyway, because things happen on the horizon, you know. So you have to, you need protection. And I wondered, maybe we made the wrong decision. Har Menuchos is a very easy to visit. Har Menuchos, very easy to visit. And then I decided, no. I think Har Zeisim was a better choice. Why? Because it's because of the people, the Jews that are buried there, that perhaps prevents the Israeli government from giving that place over to back to the Arabs. In other words, he contributes accomplishment in death on behalf of the Jewish people. The places that we settle, that belongs to Jewish people. So I think that's the explanation. When someone is in a position that he can contribute more, and I'm not just talking about finances here, I'm talking about protest, political activity, support of candidates, that's very important. Those who run for office know that the Jewish people put, and I don't think Israel should be the only question, but it has to be the number one question. Who we support, then they're more careful. But if Jews take the position that, hey, we should give back these lands, give back everything that we captured. Captured? Why did we capture? We didn't go in. We captured the lands that Jordan had when they invaded Israel. And of course, no one heard about a Palestinian state in those days. So we have to understand that the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah of conquering it, but keeping it securely Jewish. Securely Jewish doesn't mean that you have soldiers around it without people living there. Much easier to take away the soldiers than it is to take away the people residing there. Securely Jewish means that the Jews reside there, but if somebody outside the land of Israel is there, can help contribute more by being outside the land of Israel, he fulfills the mitzvah. It's not just that he's not in violation of the command. He actually fulfills the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, of residing in Israel. Because the mitzvah is not just the mitzvah of me residing, it's the mitzvah of making Eretz Yisrael the residence of the Jewish people. Now, I think, but when we speak of the Jewish people, we can't speak of the Jewish people as a people of one generation. We have to think in terms of the Jewish people of all generations. That's the idea of Nasati Oso Lechem Marasha Ani Hashem. We have to bring all the generations of the Jewish people. Nasasis Yadi Laseisoso, I give it to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. When God gives the land to us, he's giving it to Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Because he's giving it, our attitude has to be that he's giving it to the Jews of all generations. That's the idea of Morasha. It's a Morasha, it's a heritage. A heritage is something, not that just that you take, but an heritage is something that you give over. When you take it, you have to take it with the intent of giving it over to future generations.
Thank you.
I'm going to just take a minute of your time. If you wouldn't mind, please clean off the tables, leave the tablecloths where they are, and make sure that you do a neat job in throwing your garbage away in garbage bags.